All right, say good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Chaf Dalet. We're picking up at the Mishnah Chaf Gimel Amud Bey. Says the Mishnah, V'chein shnei anashim ze omer koinani. V'ze omer koinani. So mostly we have two people who come along. This one says, I'm a Kohen. And this one says, I'm a Kohen. So what's the halacha? The Mishnah says, Einan ne'emanin. They're not believing. Now Rashi says over here, what does it mean, ne'emanin? What does it mean? They want Rishon and Shul. What's the issue over here? So Rashi says, Einan ne'emanin, litein lahen truma. No. This is not about getting the first aliyah. Right? This is about getting truma. So if each one shows up and says, I'm a Kohen, this one says, I'm a Kohen, this one says, I'm a Kohen, so we do not believe them in order to give them truma. However, but if they testify about one another, then in fact they are believed. So Rashi says, now, in essence, what's happening over here is each one is still testifying about himself and about his fellow. So as such, again, you have, so each one is testifying about himself and about his fellow, they're believed. Rabbi Huda says, no, according to the Tanakam, according to the Rabbanon, first opinion of the Mishnah, all you need is an eid echad, one witness to testify that someone is a Kohen. Rabbi Huda comes along and says, no, ein ma'alin lekuna pi eid echad. You cannot elevate someone to the kahuna on the basis of the testimony of one witness. Amar Rabbi Lazar, Srabosa Machlokis Rabbanon, Rabbi Huda. Rabbanon say Eid Echad works for the kahuna. Rabbi Huda says Eid Echad does not work for the kahuna. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Eimasai, when is this true? Bismakum Shiyesh Orin, where there are people who are objecting to this individual's claim that he is an Eid Echad. Excuse me, that he's a Kohen. I'm sorry, Rashi's Orin, Shikarnalav Shem Psul, where this individual who's saying that he's a Kohen, others are disagreeing and saying that no, he's not a Kohen, he's a Psul. Avabamakum Shein Orin, but where there are no one who is objecting to this individual's claim, then Ma'alun Kuna Pi Eid Echad, then you can elevate someone to the Kahuna on the basis of the testimony of one witness. So say, Rabbi Elazar seems to be coming along and qualifying Rabbi Huda's statement. Then when does Rabbi Huda require to aid him? That's only when there's Orin. That's only when there's someone who's objecting. But if there is no one who is objecting to this individual's claim that he in fact is a Kohen, then Lamaisa, you can't go ahead and elevate someone to the Kahuna on the basis of an Eid Echad.
Is the objection he was, but he puzzled himself?
No, he's puzzled. He's puzzled. He's a Chol. He's a Mamzer. He's whatever it is. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Askan, Ma'alin l'kuna al p'yei d'echad. And Abbas comes like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Askan that we do go ahead and elevate someone to the kuna on the basis of an eidecha. So Abbas says, fundamental machlok zitin, Rabbi Elazar, excuse me, the Rabbanan and Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbanan say you can go ahead and elevate a person to the status of a Kohen on the basis of an Eid Echad, and Rabbi Yehuda says you cannot. Rabbi Elazar goes ahead and qualifies the Machlokas to say that that's only when there's an objection. That's when you need two witnesses, but in the absence of any objections, everyone will agree that Lamaisa, an Eid Echad, will work. Says the Gemara, Kol Hani Lamalim. Now the Gemara is asking a different kind of question. The Gemara says over here, look at Rashi, Kol Hani, the Tanamas Nisan. All the previous Mishnayos until this one have all dealt with cases of apesha asar hu apesha hitir. This principle that when you go ahead and you are the one who brings certain information to light, so you are also believed to qualify that information. So the Gemara now is asking, why do we need so many cases to illustrate that same point? We've had a number of Mishnayos to illustrate it. So why don't we need all those Mishnayos? Kalani lamali. Tzrichi, we need all of them. I'll tell you why. The Tanam of Rabbi Yoshua, I always remember the first case of apesha asar apesha hitir was the case of where I go over to Reuven, I say, Reuven, you know, this piece of land that I have, that I own, I bought it from your father. So Rabbi Yeshua was the one who said, in that case, I am believed. Why? Because so had we just said that case, the Itanim of Rabbi Yeshua, the real estate case, Mishum Dikadra de Mamona, because in that case there's the potential loss of money. Because remember, again, now that I say something, so perhaps Reuven could object to the fact that I'm not really the owner. So perhaps in a case like that where there is the potential loss of money, I am believed when I go ahead and I give this information, because again, if it wasn't true, then why would I say anything and run the potential risk of losing my land? Aval Eden, but in the case of Eden, Rabbi, remember the case of the Eden was the case of where the witnesses said, yes, this is our signature, but what? We were coerced, right? Or we were ketanim. I would have thought maybe in the case of Eden, we shouldn't believe them. The lekadrar de mamona, because there's no real loss, potential loss for them. Imalo, in other words, Rabbi, had we just stated the first case of Rabbi Yoshua, which was a real estate case, I would have said, when do we say apesh, shasra, apesh, hitir? That's when there's a potential financial loss for the person making the statement. That it, because again, the fact that they could suffer potential financial loss, but they still make the statement, indicates that what? That what they're saying must be true. But perhaps if there's no potential financial loss, then why should I believe their statement? Vitana Edim, and if we would have just said the case of Edim, which is the case we'll say where the witnesses say, this is our signature, but we were coerced, I would have said Mishum Dila Alma. The reason why they're believed in that case is because, again, they're giving testimony that impacts others but does not impact themselves. And maybe that's why they're believed, because they have no vested interest to lie. Aval ihu delenafshe tap of chavdalet emalo. But in the case, again, of the real estate transaction, where I am benefiting myself when I say that the land is mine, perhaps we should not be believed. Perhaps I should not be believed in such a case like that. Top of Chavdalet. Vi'i ashmo inon hani tarti. And if we would have just learned these first two cases, i.e., the case of Rabbi Yeshua, the real estate case, this land used to belong to your father, but now I own it. And the witnesses' case, this is our signature. These are our signatures. But we were coerced. I would have said mishum d'mamona, because I will say these cases involve monetary law. So perhaps we say papesh asra pesh. In cases of monetary law, aval ishes ish di isura emalo. But in the case of ishes ish, Rabbi, remember what was the case of ishes ish? This was the case of where a woman said, "I was married, but now I'm divorced." So remember, we also said over there, apesha asar hu apesha hitir. So if it would have just said the first two cases, I would have said we only apply apesha asar apesha hitir monetary cases. But in cases of iser, like where a woman says, I was married, but now I'm divorced, perhaps we do not apply the Pesha Asar, Pesha Hitir idea, to which the Gemara says, Emalo, Nishpesi, therefore again, I need to include the Eishes Ish case as well. Suppose I say, now we've established so far why I need the real estate case, why I need the witnesses case, and why I need the marriage case. I was married, but now I'm divorced. So even though, again, those are all illustrations of the same principle of apesh asur, apesh hetir, they could not have been learned out one from the other. However, again, nishpesi utahora ani lamali, but why do I need the case of where she says, I was taken captive, but I was not violated? So remember, the Mishnah said the same thing. Pesh asra pesh hetir, I was taken captive, but I wasn't violated. So why do I need that case? Meaning, that would seem to fit into the same iser situation as Eishes Ish. And if you've already illustrated the concept of a pesh asra pesh hetir by Eishes Ish, why would I have to do it again over here? Mishum de kaboy lemisni. Because we need to go ahead and state the following case. V'im mishani says ba'u edim hari zu lo teitze. Because we need that case of nishpesi utahora ani to teach us the case that if she went ahead and she got married, and then witnesses came along that said that she was violated, that's what? That she does not have to leave her Kohanic husband. To which the Gemara says, Hanicha, bro, so this is all just, these are all cases we learned. Hanicha laman demasni la'aseifa. That makes sense according to the one who goes ahead and says that that statement of Mishenises ba'u eidim harezu lo teitze is referring to the sefer, is referring to the case of where she said, Nishpesi utahora ani, that I was taken captive, but I was not violated. But the one who says, Rabbi said, it's referring to the following case, that I was married, but now I am divorced. My ikal emeimar, then what can be said? Why do I need this particular case? The kabay lemisni shtei noshim shenishbu. Oh, because we need to include the case of two women ultimately who were taken captive. And Abba say this is the case, two women who are taken captive, and each testifies about the other. Ushtein nashim shenishbu lamali. Why do I need this case of the two women who were taken captive? Ma'u detema nechosh legomlin. I would have thought that what, that when two women are taken captive, and one says the other was not violated, right? And the other one says the other one was not violated, I would have said that we're choshesh for gomlin. Gomlin abosa means that we're choshesh perhaps for reciprocity, meaning maybe they're conspiring with one another in order to go ahead and testify on each other's behalf. Kamash molon, no. Kamash molon, that we're not choshesh for that. The Gemara says, Kamash molon, v'chein shnei anoshim lamali. So to why do I need the case of shnei anoshim? Rabbi say, this is the case over here of our Mishnah. Shnei anoshim are the two guys who show up and each one says, I'm a Kohen. Mishum de kabari lemisna plukta to Rabbi Huda v'Rabbanan. Because we want to illustrate the machlokes Rabbi Huda and the Rabbanan. Namely, again, can you go ahead and make someone a Kohen on the basis of the testimony of an Eidech? So Rabbi say, what the Gemara has just successfully done in just a couple of lines is explained why we needed all of the cases of Apesha, Asura, Apesha, Hitir up until now, because even though they are all apparently illustrating, not apparently, even though they are all illustrating the same exact principle of HaPesha, Asura, HaPesha, Hitir, because they each have different nuanced understandings, therefore one could not be learned out from the other, and therefore we need all of them until we finally come to this, and then again the case of the two women taken captive, we have that case because that teaches us that when people testify about each other, we don't have to automatically assume that there's some type of collusion, until we finally come to this case where again our Mishnah is not a Pesha or Pesha Hitir, but rather again, our Mishnah is here to illustrate a more fundamental dispute between the Rabbanon and Rabbi Yehuda about whether or not you can make someone or establish someone a Kohen as a Kohen for Truma purposes on the basis of the testimony of an Eid Echad. Good. Tan Rabbanon. Ani Kohen, v'chaveri Kohen. So two people show up, right? Reuven and Shimon. Reuven says, I'm a Kohen, and my friend Shimon is a Kohen. So what's Talacha? Ne'eman la'achilu b'trumo. So such testimony is believed to go ahead and allow them to eat truma. However, ve'eno ne'eman la'hasio isha. But it's not enough to allow them to get married. Now, Bosa, now what does this mean? So if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, ne'eman la'achilu b'truma ve'eno ne'eman la'hasio isha. Miyuchases ma'alihi biyuchses. So watch this case. Reuven and Shimon show up. Reuven says, Shimon's a Kohen. Shimon says, Reuven's a Kohen. So fine. You have an Eidechad. Eidechad, apparently the Gemara is saying over here, like the opinion of the Rabbanon, is enough to make someone a Kohen for Truma purposes, but it's not enough for Yichus purposes, meaning that we could, it's interesting, you could establish him as a Kohen for Truma consumption, but not automatically for Yichus, which means that, in other words, you can't rule out the fact that he's possibly a Mamzer or a Nesin or someone else. So he could eat Truma, but he can't go ahead and marry as if he was genealogically unblemished. However, Achi Yehu Gimel, until you have three people, Shnayim Mi'idin Alzeh, Ushnayim Mi'idin Alzeh. In other words, Rabbah said, the only time you can ascertain that someone's Yichus is in order is when he has two witnesses. So apparently one witness is necessary to eat Truma, two witnesses for Yichus. Rabbi Huda says, we'll say, he calls it three people, but it means a group of three. It means one person and two witnesses testifying against him. Rabbi Huda says, Af ino ne'ma la'achil b'shruma, ad shi'hu shlosha. And Rabbi Huda disagrees, as he does in the Mishnah, that no, Eid Echad is not even good enough to allow this person to eat shruma. Even for truma purposes, he can't eat truma until one. Ad shi'hu shlosha, shnayim idin azeh, shnayim idin azeh. Even for truma, you can't eat truma until one, until you have three people. In other words, two people testifying for each guy that he's a Kohen. Lememra. The Rabbi Huda chayish legomlin. Now, is that saying that Rabbi Huda is choshesh for reciprocity? Meaning, is Rabbi Huda choshesh that perhaps not reciprocity, but more collusion? Right? Is he choshesh that there's some type of collusion over here? For Rabbana lo chayish legomlin, and the rabbis are not concerned for some type of collusion. V'ha ipchash shamin luhu. But yet we learned the opposite. This nan. Let's listen to this case. This is an interesting case, actually. Hachamarin shenichnasu liyir. Let's see. You have two merchants. Two merchants, Rashi says, Chamarin sosrei tivua umolichin mimakom hazol lekrachin. So these are merchants that would go to the cities to go in and sell their wares. So what happened? Listen to this. Va'amar echan mehen shali chadash v'shal chaveri yashan. Sheli eina matukan v'shal chaveri matukan. Listen to this. So two merchants show up in town, and one guy says, Oh, my produce is chadash. My produce is chadash, right? His produce is yashan. And I will say, now remember again, So which one is better? So look at Rashi over here. So this is not over here, Chadash and Yashan, like halachic Chadash and Yashan. This is Rashi over here. It says Mishabeach Eshel Chaveiro Umezalzel Eshelo Shali Eino Meusar Veshel Chaveiri Meusar Shali Chadash Veino Yavesh Adain Kol Tzar Veino Yavash Adain Kol Tzarcho Veshel Chaveiri Yashan VeYavash Kol Tzarcho Distam Yashan Tov Mina Chadash. So also listen to this. So two merchants walk into the city. One says, listen, my produce is not so good, right? But my friend's produce, oh, he's got the good produce. Or he says, you know what? My produce is not tithed. But my friend's produce is tithed. I'm looking out for you, right? I want to do you a favor. Don't buy here, right? Go to my friend. So what's the halacha? Eino ne'eman. We don't believe him. Now why don't we believe him? Rashi says, Eino ne'eman. Hoyo va'ama aratzu ve'eino ne'eman ala maser. Afa pisha meid al shalosh, inu mitukon. Va'od shemosef imzu. Farmachin lo shabayach ha'shal chaveiro. Eino ne'eman lachzik ha'shal chaveiro. V'cheskas mitukon. She'eino ele ma'arimin. Because again, essentially the Gemara says, we don't believe him. You know why? Because this is collusion. This is collusion. This doesn't make sense because this is not the way merchants work, right? Merchants do not go ahead and say, that guy's produce is much better than mine. So this collusion, therefore, again, we don't believe him. You know, so meaning now, we don't care. What do you mean? We don't believe him if his produce is old or new. That doesn't matter to us. What matters to us more is in the case, ultimately, again, of where he says that it's tithed. Now, we're not going to get into this too much now, but remember, when we say we don't believe him, it doesn't automatically mean that we believe that, therefore, his produce is tithed. What we actually believe is the same probability that his produce is not tithed is the same probability that what? That the other guy's produce is also not tithed. Because remember, when it comes to produce of Amei Ha'aretz, they have the status of Demai, which means, again, of questionable status to begin with. Rabbi Huda says, Ne'eman. Rabbi Huda says, no, we believe the merchant. So what I say, here you see that the Rabbanon hold that what? Here you see that the Rabbanon hold that choshish for gomlin. We are choshish for collusion. We are choshish for collusion. And yet again, Rabbi Huda holds that we're not choshish for collusion. This contradicts what we said before, because beforehand we said the Rabbanon are the ones who said that we are not choshish for collusion. And Rabbi Huda is Amrav Adabar Ava, Amrav Mukhlefes Ashita. Shav Adabar, Arab is the name of Rav, no problem. Switch around the opinions that it's the Rabbanon who hold that the merchant is believed, and Rabbi Yehuda does not, which would then again keep their shitos in alignment, namely that the Rabbanon are the ones who are not choshesh for collusion, but Rabbi Yehuda is. So Abai Amar the Olam Lotefuch, Abai says, no, don't switch around the shitos. Bidemayekilu. They were lenient in the realm of Demai. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda holds that essentially, since Demai is rabbinic, lo to be Demai akilu rov ame haaretz ma'asrin hein. The Rabbi says, remember, what are we dealing with over here? We're dealing with produce of an ama aretz. So there's a rabbinic gezeira against produce of an ama aretz that it's Demai. Remember, Demai is a contraction of two words, Demai. What is this? Which means that the produce of an ama aretz is of questionable status because we don't know if it has been tithed or not. The reality is the majority of Ami Haaretz do tithe their produce. Just for Choshesh, we have a rabbinic stringency. Therefore, Rabbi Huda seems to say in this particular case, we could be mekel and not enforce the rabbinic stringency. Amar Rava said, Rabbi Huda l'kasha, and therefore I will say, that's why Rabbi Huda allows us to believe the merchant. Rava, on the other hand, says, I'm Rava, Rabbi Huda, Kasha, Drabana, Lo Kasha. That's fine if you reconcile the position of Rabbi Huda, but what about the contradiction in the Shitos of the Rabbanon? Ella, Rabbi Huda, Lo Kasha, Kedishanayan. Rather, says Rava like this, Rabbi Huda's positions do not pose a contradiction, as we said before, because even though Rabbi Huda seems to normally be concerned for collusion, in this case he's not. Why? Because we could be mako, we could be lenient in the laws of Demai, and therefore we'll believe what the merchant says. However, Drabonon ad Drabonon lo kasha, but why is there not a contradiction between the positions of Drabonon? Listen to this. Kida Amar Rabbi Chama bar Okva, because we apply the statement of Rabbi Chama bar Okva, who said, Bishakli umnaso biyado. Hachat Amud Beis, Hachanami, Bishakli umnaso biyado. Arab will say, what's the case over here in the merchants? The case of the merchants is where the merchant who's saying, my produce is inferior to my fellows, or my produce is untithed, my fellows is tithed, what does he have with him? he has his utensils necessary for selling his produce. What does this mean? Look at Rashi. B'shekli umnaso biyadom, chamar hamevi tevua limkar. If you have a merchant who brought his grain to sell, hayanose biyado kli heker shalmechira, he would bring certain utensils with him that for selling purposes. Kigon machak shemochkin boas hamida, he would bring. I don't know what the technical name for this utensil is, but like a smoother. You know, if you're piling, if you're measuring out a pile of grain or a pile of some type of produce, something to smooth out the top, smooth off the measure. Shemochakin ba'as amida v'hamavia la'atznia eno nose biyado kli umnos mecher v'hacha. So we'll say, so what's the case over here? The case over here is v'hacha kagon shekli umnos biyado. So Rabbi Rami Bar Chama qualifies this case. He says, Rabbi Chama Bar Okva says the case is like this, where what happens, Reuven and Shimon show up in town, and Reuven says, listen, don't buy by me. My stuff is not good, right? I have inferior produce, or my stuff is not tithe. So Rami Bar Chama says, when do we not believe him? When we see that he brought his measuring utensils, his smoothing utensils, which also indicates what? Indicates what? That his intention is to sell produce. If his intention is to sell produce, then why is he directing us towards his fellow merchant? It could only be for one reason, which is collusion. Therefore, the Gemara says, and therefore, again, I will say, say for what the Gemara is suggesting over here, is that the Rabbanan, under normal circumstances, would not be choshesh for collusion. But in this case, the reason they say we don't believe Reuven, merchant, number one, is because we see that he has clay umnaso. He has the utensils of his profession with him, which indicates that he came to town to do business. He came to town to sell produce. Now, if he came to town to sell produce, but now he's telling us to go to the next merchant, that looks strange. That looks like collusion. So the Gemara says, "Veheicha itmar drayin bar Chama bar Okva." Where was this statement of Rabbi Chama bar Okva made? Aha! It was made on the following case. This is not because we learned. Hakedar sheniach kederos aviyar lishtos. Was that kedar is an individual ultimately who sells utensils. Sells utensils. So utensil salesman, a jug salesman that went and he put his utensils down. Viyarad lishtos, and he set them down by the river because he wanted to drink water. So what's that lacham? Hapanimios tahoros, the inner ones are tahar. Vachitsonios tmeos, and the outer ones are tame. Vahatanya, but we learned Elu vi elu tmeos, that both the inner ones and the outer ones are tame. So we'll say, so what's going on over here? Amrei bar Chama b'shekli umnaso biyado. What's the case over here? This is talking about an individual who was a salesperson, a salesman of kedarim, of jugs, of utensils. And what happened? Mipnei shiyat hakol mishamesh es bahen. So we'll say, if you're a jug salesman, there's one thing you can be pretty sure of, which is what? When you go ahead and you bring your wares to market, so what's going to happen? Everyone's going to touch every single thing. So the assumption there for Rabbi Say is what? Is that lemaisa, your utensils are tame. Utensils are tame. So the Gemara says, "Ay v'hatanya, v'hatanya elu ve'elu tahoros." But we learned elsewhere in a braisa that, I skipped a piece. And Rabbi Chama says, what's the case over here? B'shekli umnaso biyado, where he has literally his utensils that he usually uses to sell these other kedarim, whatever those utensils are, with him. In other words, that it's clear that he's selling these utensils. Therefore, the assumption is that people have touched them. Because people have touched them, the Braisa says the inner ones are tahar, the outer ones are tamin. I will discuss what that distinction is in just a moment. So the Gemara says, v'hatanya, but we learn elu v'ilu tahoros. But we learn in another Braisa that all of the utensils are tahar. Amar Rabbi Chama bar Ukva b'she'en klei umnaso biyado. When do we say that all of the utensils are tahar? That's what Rabbi Chama says. When he doesn't have the utensils with him that he normally uses when he sells his product. In other words, that he's not necessarily acting in the capacity as a salesman. If he's not acting in the capacity of a salesman, then what? Then we assume people don't touch his stuff. If we assume people don't touch his stuff, then they're all tahar. So I don't understand. So then what did you mean before when you said that the inner ones are tahar, but the outer ones, I mean, we'll say, it's either all or nothing. if he's carrying his sale utensils with him, meaning if he's if it's clear that he's doing business with these utensils, then what? Then what? What should be the status of the kedarim? They should all be tameh because the nice the assumption is people are touching them. But if he's not carrying his kliyum nasav, he's not carrying his utensils with which he normally conducts his business with, then it's clear that he's not selling the items. In which case, all of them should be tar. So why? But what does it mean in the Brayis? It says the inner ones are tar and the outer ones are tameh. To which the rest, I'll tell you. Dismicha l'rishis harabim. It's where he put his utensils down next to the public thoroughfare. It's because people from the Rosh Rabbin, from the public thoroughfare, literally rub against the utensils. And I will say, look at Rashi for just a moment. So Rashi says over here, Umishum chifufei Rosh Rabbin, Shinosnim b'nei Adam, Avanim gidolim, gidolos, o yisedo sidish surabim. So we'll say, what happened is people, the people, wherever the people was, would construct, either would put large stones or posts by the edges of Rosh Hasharabim, laharchek ha'golos milahazik esak salim. So we'll say, so often in Talmudic times, so public thoroughfares were had walls on both sides. The problem is you needed a buffer between the Rosh Hasharabim and the wall because otherwise the wagons would rub against the walls, which ultimately over time erode the wall. So you used to have like a barrier. Like a barrier, you know, like kind of like you have today. I'm sorry?
Like a cone?
Well, it's more than a cone because it's solid. It's solid, right? Like a post, right? So you'd have like a barrier between the edge of Sarabim where you'd have like what we'll call vehicular traffic or wagon pedestrian traffic and the wall. So what happens? He says, Umitoch Shein Doch Kos Esh Sarabim, Vizehe Niach Kideirosav Etzlam, Dochak Gamhu Es Aderech, Vaha Ovren Sham Schachachin Bahen. So what's the case over here? The case over here is where this kedar salesman, this utensil salesman, put his wares down by the side of the road. Where did he put it? He put it pretty much right by the posts, right by the big stones that are the barrier for the Shusarabim. So what happens? Pedestrians rub against, right? They brush against those rocks or those posts all the time. So when he put his utensils there, the chances are that what? That pedestrians, Ame Ha'aretz, brushed against it or walked over it, and therefore what? Conveyed tuma to those utensils. That's what the price means when it says the outer ones. The outer ones are tzmias. The outer ones are reference to what? Those that abutted the Rosh Sarabim. Those were right next to the Rosh Sarabim. But the penimios, the inner ones, refer to those ultimately that were not at the edge of the Rosh Sarabim, but rather were a little bit further in. Okay, so I'll say, so therefore, again, so if we just stop over here for just a moment, we're not stopping here, but if, again, just to pause for just a moment, so we have over here so far is that we have still have our fundamental machlokes in Rabbi Yudin the Rabbanon, meaning the Rabbanon allowing for an eight echad to go ahead and make someone a coin for truma purposes, the Rabbanon rejecting an eight echad. Apparently, there are cases, now normally, again, we say the Rabbanon are not choshesh for collusion, and Rabbi Yehuda is, except, again, we saw a case where their positions are reversed. Their positions are reversed either because it's an issue of deny, or ultimately, again, because it was a situation where the merchant was carrying his sale utensils with him. If he's carrying his sale utensils with him, but yet what? He's still directing people towards his fellow merchant. Merchant, that is a sure sign of collusion. Fine. Now the Gemara goes right. V'bay seima. Back to the previous sugya. V'bay seima. Rabbi Huda Rabbana Malim Mitrum Aliyach. Come if lagi. Perhaps I will say what Rabbi Huda and the Rabbana are really arguing about is a more fundamental dispute, namely, what are the ramifications of allowing someone to eat truma? Do we say that once a person is allowed to eat truma, that is like a seal of approval on his yichus as well? And perhaps that's what Rabbi Huda and the Rabbanan are disagreeing about. The Rabbanan say, just because someone eats truma does not automatically mean that therefore they have proper Kohanic yichus. And therefore we could believe in Eid Echad to go and allow someone to eat truma, and we're not concerned that people are going to make an assumption about a coin's yichus based on that. Whereas Rabbi Huda says, absolutely incorrect. When people see someone eating truma, they assume that what? Not only is he a coin for truma purposes, but he's a coin for yichus purposes as well. And therefore, again, you can't allow someone to eat truma on the basis of an Eid Echad. You're required to eat them. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says over here, B'malin mitrumali yochsin. Rabbi Huda sav. Rabbi Huda holds. Haroah shemachil in trumali adam becheskas koin made la b'chamakum shu koin. O'malin osli yochsin. Hilchach im tachilu a truma hari atem aviyola siya isha v'tamei la mishum goblin hu v'rabbanos av. Imal mitruma. So we'll say here, the Gemara is suggesting this is not a machlok is about reciprocity or collusion. This is a machlok is about what the ramifications of allowing someone to eat truma is. Rabbi Huda says if people see a coin eating truma, we assume that he's a yichus the coin is a yichus coin, and therefore they're going to end up allowing him to marry a woman of good yichus as well. We can't let that happen. Therefore, I need two witnesses. The Rabbanan say no. People don't assume that because you see someone eating truma, that he's a miyuchas coin, and therefore we're not concerned that he may marry someone who is miyuchas on the basis of his eating truma, and therefore we could believe in Eid Echad. Ibailuhu. So we're going to ask the question. This is actually very interesting as well. Ma'u lahalos mishtaros liyuchsim. Can you go ahead and can you elevate someone? Can you make someone a coin miyuchas? In other words, can you attest to someone's Quranic genealogy on the basis of what's written in a shtar? So the Gemara says, well, hechi dami, what's the case? Ilema de kasev bay, ani ploin coin chasamti aid man kamase diluya. If you want to see Rabbi say, they have the following case that Reuven signed as a witness on a shtar. And on the witness, and the way how did he sign? He said, Reuven ben Yaakov HaKohen. Right? So that, do we say now, based on the fact that he signed as a Kohen, that that's a sign that his Yichus is intact? So the Gemara says, of course not, right? Meaning you could sign your name however you want on a shtar, and no one is attesting to the validity of that. You could write Kohen Gadol on it. Doesn't make you the Kohen Gadol. Lotzicha, listen to this. No. The Ksiv Bey, Ani Kloni Kohen Lavisi Mana Meploni, V'chasimu Sahadi. Both say, this is very interesting. What's the case? The case is where the shtar says that Reuven HaKohen borrowed money from Shimon, and the witnesses then sign on that shtar. So we'll say, listen to this chakira. So the Gemara says, "Mai amana shebishtar kamisadi, ol dilma akula milsa kamisadi." When witnesses, this is fascinating. When witnesses sign on a document, say, "Edim now sign on that." What are witnesses attesting to? Are they attesting to the transaction recorded in the shtar that Reuven borrowed $1,000 from Shimon, or do they attest to all of the facts recorded in the shtar? Even what? Even the fact that Reuven is a kohen. Such a fascinating shayla. So Rafuna Rav Chista Chad Amar Malin. So Rafuna Rav Chista once said, no, well, if Reuven is recorded as a kohen in the shtar, that attests to his yichus. In other words, that's another way of saying, then when witnesses sign on the shtar, they are not just simply attesting to the transaction, but they're attesting to what? To all of the information recorded in the document. The Chadam, another opinion, said, no, ein ma'alin. We do not go ahead and raise a coin up to be a miyuchas coin on the basis of the fact that it calls him a coin in the shtar. Why? Because again, which makes sense, by the way, that you can't assume that witnesses did a genealogical check because this is not a genealogical shtar. Not like a ksuva. So we'll say, again, you can make a distinction. A ksuva witness is signing a ksuva, so yichos plays a very big role. When Reuven borrows $1,000 from Shimon, who cares what his genealogy is? What matters most is what? Is that we are testifying that he owes him $1,000. Therefore, again, I will say, Rav Chista, Rav Chista says, Ein Ma'alin, that just because it says that the borrower is a coin, the witnesses are not at all attesting to that, or they're not at all getting involved in that at all. All they are testifying to and lending their signatures to is the transaction, but nothing about the yichus. Another question, Ibailu, Ma'alalos, is another interesting question. Menesios kapayim liyuchsim. Now, I'll say, you should know, these are very interesting shilas for us. Now, today, these don't really have so much of a contemporary ramification, because the truth is, there's no truma. But in the days where there was truma, this is a big discussion about how you go ahead and attest that someone is actually a kohen. Now, I'll say, of course, it's going to have ramifications in the Messianic era, because, the Gemara says that when Eliyahu HaNavi comes, so one of the first things he's going to do is he's going to straighten out yichus, because there's no question that there are kohanim who think they're kohanim who are definitely not kohanim. There are people who are not kohanim who are going to become kohanim. So Yanov is going to, which is understandable, because after thousands of years of diaspora and dispersion, family lines get messed up a little bit. So that's interesting. So we'll see when Eliyanavi comes. Well, it'll be interesting to see how everything shakes out. So the Gemara is asking over here, really, remember, for truma purposes, for truma purposes, you know, do we, with a coin, if a coin engages in what we call kohanic behaviors, is that enough to allow him to eat truma? So another example, yibaylo, ma lalos min nesios kapayim liuchsin. Now, boss, can we say that if somebody's duchening, let's say I've seen Aaron HaKohen duchening for the last 20 years, is that enough to establish his yichus? Is that enough to say that he has a coin proper yichus? So the Gemara says, "Tiboy leman darim malim itshuma liyuchsin v'tiboy leman darim malim ein malin." So I'll say. So this question is a question, both according to the opinion who says that if somebody's eating truma, then that attests to their yichus, and according to the opinion who says that if they eat truma, it doesn't attest to their yichus. How so? Tiboy leman darim malin. So according to Mandam, who says that we can go ahead and go from truma to yichus, hani mili truma. No, it's only if a person eats truma that attests to their yichus. Why? Do avon mise, because if also I remember, if a non-kohen eats truma, this biblical truma, carries with it a death penalty. So chances are, if you are not 1,000% sure about your yichus, it's just good advice. If you're not 1,000% sure, right? Like if you are not one of those, if you know, used to be there, now, today, they say there's pretty much only one Rappaport. Rappaport is one of the few families that are Kohanim Yuchasim. That they have, usually if you're a Rappaport, but even now it's not as clear because there are different Rappaports, right? But, right? No, except Rappaport and Arshel. They're not Kohanim. Actually, but they also spell their names differently. It's interesting. So again, Rappaports are Kohanim Yuchasim. It used to be that cats was also Kohanim Yuchasim because cats was a contraction for Kohen Tzedek. That's out the window because there are many, many cats who are not Kohanim. But there are very few Mishpachos Miuchasos. So if you were not, let's say, a Rappaport, chances are it'd be a very bad idea to eat Truma. Because as much as you think that you're a Kohen, and your father thinks he's a Kohen, maybe even your grandfather, if you are not 1,000% sure, the stakes are quite high. If you are wrong, you are consuming something that carries the death penalty. So therefore, according to the Mandamu, it says that if you eat truma, then ultimately, again, that allows you to establish yourself as a Kohen Miyuchas. It makes sense. Because if you're willing to eat truma, that's a pretty good statement of that what? That you're positive, that you're sure about your Kohanic status. Avon, the Sias Kapayim, but also getting up there to Duchen. So what happens if a non-Kohen gets up to Duchen? What happens if a non-Kohen gets to Duchen? The Isra say, the truth is, it's not good, but you violated a positive commandment. Because Torah says, Kosev Aruchum says to the children of Aaron, you have to bless them. So if a non-Kohen, duchens, he's violating Naseh. So just because a non-Kohen, is just because somebody's duchening, that's not a good raya that they're a Kohen. So the Gemara says, Dilma, or the other possibility is, no shtar prabbis, it makes no distinction. And if somebody's willing to duchen, that also shows that what? That lamaisa, they're a Kohen. Tiboy lamanda amra in malin, or according to Mandamu, says that we do not go ahead and say that someone is a Kohen miyuchas based on their willingness to eat truma. Hani mili truma dimis achla betzina, because only truma is consumed in private. So therefore, again, you can't assume that because somebody eats truma, that attests to their yuchas. Aval nesius kapayim de vifarhesya. But Rabbosai, duchening, which happens in public, ilav Kohen, were it not for the fact that this person is a Kohen, kulei hai lo machtziv in nishnafshe. Rabbi say, a person would never have so much chutzpah to get up in duchen if what? If they were not really a bona fide Kohen. Odilma, or perhaps loshna, perhaps it makes no distinction. So which thing? So we'll say. So which one is it? So Rav Chistev Ravina, Rav Chistev Ravina have a machlokas. Chad Amar Malin. One says that if you duchen, that is an indication. That is a good enough indication about your yichus. The Chad Amar Ein Malin. And one opinion said that no, we are not malin. We do not go ahead and raise a person up to the status of a kohen based on his willingness to duchen. So Nachum Reitzik says, he asked this question pointedly. So do we say that if a person duchens, that that's enough of an attestation to their yichus? Armalei plukta Rav Chistev Rav Avino. It's a machlokesin Rav Chistev Rav Avino. Hilcha samai. So what is the halacha? Right. So meaning, so what's the bottom line? If somebody's duchening, is that enough of attestation to their yichus? So says the Gemara says, so he said, Amarlei, Ana Masnisa Yidana. The only thing I can tell you is I know a Braisa. What does the Braisa say? This Sanya. Rabbi Yossi says, Gedola Chazaka. Chazaka is great. Chazok is great. Now, meaning chazok is strong. Now, what does that mean? Shenemar, and Abbas, I hear, we're going to start this today, although we'll end up continuing this tomorrow. This is quite interesting. So the Gemara here quotes the pasuk from Ezra. And the Ramallah says, when they come back from in the second temple, to rebuild the second Beis HaMikdash, ultimately, remember, a large portion of the Jewish people do not come with Ezra and Nehemiah. They stay behind. And there were two major issues. Levium, virtually no Levium showed up. This was amazing. Virtually none of the Levium showed up, which is why, by the way, they lost their Maaser Rishon. It was given to the Kohanim. And the other big issue was rampant intermarriage among the Kohanim themselves. So rampant intermarriage among the Kohanim poses two problems. Number one, it poses a problem for the Kohen himself. If the Kohen is intermarried, he may not do the Avodah. That's number one. And of course, it poses major problems vis-a-vis their offspring in terms of being Chalolim, or maybe even not Jewish. So the Gemara quotes the Pasuk, Omibnei Kohanim, from the sons of Kohanim, Bnei Chavaya, Bnei Akots, Bnei Barzilai. So these were all Kohanic families. Asher Lokach Mibnos Barzilai Hagil, the Isha, Vaikara Ashma, Ela Bikshuk Savam Hamasyachashim, Velo Nimtzus. So Nehemiah required that these Kohanic families produce documentation that their familial lines were still pure, that their familial lines ultimately again were still intact. They were unable to produce proper documentation, and therefore what? And therefore, Vaik Olam and Akuna. Literally, they were turned away from the Kuhuna. They lost their Kohanic standing. Vayomer Hatir Shasa Lahem. So we'll say Hatir Shasa said to them. Now we'll say, who is Hatir Shasa? Rashi points out, who Nehemiah ben Chachalia, the Chenkasa B'Sefer Ezra. We'll say, we learned this before. Hatir Shasa is Nehemiah. Why was his name Hatir Shasa? Nehemiah was the wine steward to the king Daryavesh. Well, one of the responsibilities you had as the wine steward is you had to taste all of the wine prior to giving it to the king, which makes sense because one of the ways in which to show your allegiance to the king, you're not trying to poison the king, is how drink the wine before. But we'll say obviously it's a big problem. Why? Because wine of a Gentile is forbidden for consumption. So what happened? The rabbis gave Nehemiah a special dispensation that he should be able to go ahead and drink. Because remember, if you can midaraisa, you can't drink what's called yayin nesach, wine that's used ultimately again for idolatrous purposes. There is a rabbinic prohibition that covers all Gentile wine called stam yenam. The rabbis suspended their prohibition for Nehemiah. So they called him Hatir Shasa. Why? It's a contraction of two words. Hatir Shasa. They allowed him to drink. So Nehemiah says to these people, Vayomer Hatir Shasa lahem, Asher lo yochlu mikodesh hakadoshim. You may not go ahead and eat of kodesh hakadoshim, of sacrificial items, ad amod koin l'urim v'tum, until the Kohen Gadol stands before the Urim V'Tumim. Now, Rabbi Narashi points out over here, Ad Amod Urim V'Tumim, Ke Adam Shomer L'Chavera Ad Sheyavo HaMashiach. The Urim V'Tumim Lo Havo V'Mikdashen, Ishenechzru Chamisha Daran Kedarim V'Sad Yuma. Now, Rabbi, remember, there were no Urim V'Tumim in the Second Temple. So in other words, what Nehemiah was saying to these families was, look, you've compromised your familial lines, therefore you may not eat of sacrificial items literally until Mashiach comes, right? Until the Kohen is there for the Urim V'Tumim. And Abbas said, I watch this just very quickly. He says, so ultimately, Nehemiah says to them, you Kohanic families, you are able to maintain your chazakah. What did you eat when you were in the Das, when you were in Bavel? Kachagvul. Both say Kachagvul means truma. You were eating truma. Now remember, truma is chutzar, is drabanon, but you were eating truma. Afkan be Kachagvul. So to you, now that you came back, you could also continue to eat that which you were eating beforehand. Now, if you thought that you would go ahead and elevate someone to be a miyuchas coin based on duchening, then I will say what? Presumably, these families were also duchening while they were in Bavel. Now, the fact that we allow them to continue to duchen indicates to us what? That we do not go ahead and establish someone as a coin miyuchas based on their ability to duchen, to which the Gemara says, "Shiny hacha, dereach eskayu." this was different over here, because even if we allow these families to duchen, it was well known that what? That their chazaka was eroded. So we're going to stop with Rabbosai kind of in the middle of the sugya, but just to explain what's happening over here, the Gemara is trying to focus on a simple question, which is that are we ma'ale minasiyas kapayim liyichus? Do we say that if we see a kohen duchening, that is an indication that in fact he is a kohen miyuchas, that is good for his yichus as well? So the Gemara wanted to prove from this whole story that you see from here that we don't say that just because someone is duchening, that is an attestation to their yichus, because we see these families that came back from Babel, they were not kohen miyuchasim, they were not established as kohen miyuchasim, they were not permitted to eat of sacrificial items, but yet what? Nehemiah allowed them to continue to do all that they were doing in Babel. What were they doing in Babel? They were eating truma and they were duchening. So what do you see? The fact that he allowed them to continue duchening indicates to us what? That just because he sees someone duchening does not attest to their yichos. To which the Gemara says, this is not a fair comparison. Because in this case, everyone knew that these families were compromised. Everyone knew that. So because that, even if they duchened, then what? No one's going to establish their yichos based on duchening. But perhaps in other situations, seeing someone duchen should attest to their yichos. So we end off with a question. And may Hashem continue the sugya tomorrow.
It's interesting that the Gemara